£1,000 and more for every £1,000 they actually have deposited. If everyone went to the banks tomorrow and took out what they theoretically have deposited there, the banks would be bankrupt so many times it'd be in the Guinness Book of Records. They haven't got it. So when we take out a loan, well, please tell me, Mother, this is not true. They type in to your account the amount you've flipping loaned. That's all they do. From that moment, you start paying interest on money that doesn't exist. People say, why is the American government trillions and trillions of dollars in debt? Ridiculous. How could it possibly do that? Very simple when you see how it works. And this is how it works around the world as well. One transaction in one day in America. The American government wants to borrow, say, $1 billion more than it's actually taken in taxation. Now it's the government. It could actually print its own money interest-free if it chose to. But of course, if it did that, you're removing massive amounts of power from the global banking system, which is controlled by the same people that decide who's going to be president of the United States. So they don't print their own money interest-free. They issue an IOU to a cartel of private banks known laughably as the Central Bank of America, known as the Federal Reserve System. The Federal Reserve System is supposed to be the Central Bank of America. It is a cartel of private banks. The present head of the Federal Reserve is Alan Greenspan, Bilderberg Group, Trilateral Commission, Council on Foreign Relations, who took over from Paul Volcker, who was there at the time of Reaganomics and Thatcherism. Paul Volcker, Bilderberg Group, Trilateral Commission, Council on Foreign Relations. You get the picture. So they issued the government an IOU to this cartel of private banks for $1 billion. The banks then type into the government's account $1 billion. That's all they've done. From that moment on, the American taxpayer, via the government, starts paying interest on $1 billion. Not only that, this IOU is now legally counted as an asset of the banks, as if they had $1 billion in their hands. So now they can lend another $10 billion to anyone else that wants to borrow it on the basis of this non-existent money. Now they're lending and getting interest on $11 billion, not one cent of which has ever or will ever exist. And we stand for this. I hear people arguing that, oh God, it's got to be like this, or the system would collapse. Good. Good. Hey, this prison wall's coming down. Get the bricks out, you know. Do a few repairs, you know. I might be getting out of prison here. Perish the thought here. Now, this is not just naval contemplation. This is very, very important to our everyday lives. Gus, if you take one product, say a food product, and you look at how this system affects the price of it, the farmer growing the food in the field, to start with, will be borrowing money that doesn't exist and paying interest on it. So the price he charges will have to reflect the fact that he's got to do that. So, in effect, what he does costs more. Same with the transport company from the farm to the factory. Now, the factory that's processing the food will be, no doubt, borrowing vast amounts of money that doesn't exist and paying interest on it, and its cost and its price will reflect that. Same with the transport from the factory to the shop, same with the shop. So by the time we put our hand up on the shelf and pull the product off, the cost of that product is massively inflated compared with what it needs to be, because everyone along the line in its production is having to add a little bit to pay interest on money that doesn't exist. Wake me up. This is why we buy three houses to live in one. We do this. I went up into the National Westminster Bank in Durham, the north of England, last year, and I got one of their mortgage leaflets. There it was in black and white. if I take out a loan to buy a house from the National Westminster Bank of £50,000, I will pay them back £152,000. I will buy three houses for the privilege of living in one, and my mortgage payments will reflect that. Therefore, the pressure for me to serve the system, to earn the money, to service that debt will be greater. And what did it say on this leaflet? The National Westminster Bank, we're here to make life easier. Great question. I found anyway, because all this is flipping opened up to me in the last few years. I didn't come out the womb saying I know it all. I can see what's going on. It's just information that's opened my eyes in the last few years. And one of the questions that I've realized opens up so much, it's a very simple one. Who benefits? Who benefits, for instance, from me accepting the version of events about the Oklahoma bombing and many other things that various media organizations and official governments and stuff are telling me is the right version of events? Who benefits? Well, who benefited from the Oklahoma bombing? Anyone who wanted to centralize more power in the law enforcement agencies in America certainly has benefited from that. And as Bill Clinton said 24 hours afterwards, we must have an easing of restrictions of the on the military's involvement in domestic law enforcement. Problem, reaction, solution. And there's so much about that Oklahoma bomb that has never come to light publicly in the main arena that I've seen, and I tell you, the government version of events is a farce and a complete lie. Anyway, who benefits from us buying three houses to live in one? Another part of that question. Well, say the house costs £60,000. The builder who actually creates the thing and makes it a reality, he don't benefit from me buying three. He's paid out the 60 grand. He's paid out of me buying one. The guy who produces the materials to the builder so he can build the house, he's paid out the 60 grand. Everyone who actually creates the house is paid out of me buying one. One person and one person alone benefits from us buying three houses, sometimes more, to live in one, and that's the guy who's lending us money that doesn't exist and charging us interest on it. And we stand for this. And a few people can't control the direction of the world. Well, we'll give our power away to this extent. It's a doddle. Interestingly, two presidents of the United States in the history of that country have suggested and in some small way begun to introduce interest-free money that wasn't borrowed from the banking cartels and interest paid on it. Those two presidents were Abraham Lincoln and John F. Kennedy. They have one other thing in common, you might recall. But perhaps the most grotesque aspect of this whole nonsense of interest on money is what we call third world debt. Third world debt has crucified vast tracts of our fellow humanity and continues to do minute by minute. The third world debt is debt on money that has never, does not, and will never exist. Last time I saw the figures, around 400,000 children in Brazil died from hunger-related disease every year. And at the time I saw those figures, Brazil was the second biggest exporter of food in the world. And the money received from that export, great chunks of it, were servicing interest on money that has never existed. And as one Brazilian official I was reading about recently said, most of the money that constitutes the Brazilian debt never left the computer systems of Wall Street. My God, it's time for a turning of the tide. Why can't governments print their own money interest-free and lend it to people interest-free? So we buy one house to live in one house instead of three. So we don't have to inflate the price of everything because everyone's got a service interest on money that doesn't exist. Why? Because it's possible. The will is not there. And why is it that no political party that I've come across anywhere in the world that has any chance of forming a government is actually suggesting that that be done? Because the same people that control the banking system control the political system in the global one-party state. There's one other thing I'll talk about before I look at solutions, which are very simple. Very simple. And that's the microchipped population. That's the one that probably sounds most bizarre, as I said earlier. But it is so close. We're already microchipping domestic animals as a matter of course. The Queen's had the corgis done. Did you see that? Last year, she's had the corgis microchipped and linked to a computer. Prince Charles, next you watch. It'll be sort him out. Funny. The technique that is being used to bring in the microchip population is another major mass mind manipulating technique. I call it the stepping stones technique. And a very good example of that is the European Union and what they have in America, the North American Free Trade Agreement, which is a free trade area, which is where the European Union started out, if you recall, and also what's happening in another free trade area in the Pacific Australia area known as APEC. The idea is to have the world government, and the bank and all the rest of it, and the next stage down from that will be the European Union, the American Union, which will be this North American free trade area, right the way through the Americas from North to South America, in the, an American version of the European Union, and a Pacific version of it. They will be the three next stages down from the world government. And the stepping stones technique is how they're being introduced. If you take the European Union, if you started out at the end of the last war, and what we're heading to now had been suggested, one bank, one currency, centralized control of a superstate, understandably, I know what my father would have said who fought in that war, excuse me a minute, can I just have a quick word here? We've just spent the last 5 years with 55 million people killed and many more severely injured to stop that happening. And you're asking us to do it without a bullet being fired. You must be joking. Go and have a cup of tea. So what the stepping stones technique does, although it knows where it's heading, it does it in stages. It gets away with what it can get away with, first of all, and then starts to move it along, and it presents every step as independent of all the others so you don't see the pattern. So what was suggested after the last war? Not a European superstate, because that had no chance at that time. It was the common market, just a free trade area, ladies and gentlemen, nothing to worry about. And by the way, if we don't join, we starve. Little problem like that, you know. Well, we'd better join then, I guess, you know. So, suddenly, some of the states of Europe start to fuse their economies together in a free trade area. Now we're in the web, because it's suggested very strongly that if anyone pulls out, there will be economic chaos, certainly in the short term. So now we're in the spider's web. So the process then starts of evolving a free trade area into a European centralized superstate. And first, we start having commissions which start dictating to nation states. Then we have talk about the central bank. And interestingly, you know, one of the things that was put forward to justify the one currency was the currency chaos in Europe. Like when the pound fell out of the European monetary system after the government had spent a colossal fortune trying to keep it in there a few years ago. Well, you know, this currency chaos, one currency would sort this problem. Interesting, therefore, that the person who attacked the pound and caused that chaos was a frontman for the House of Rothschild called George Soros, a world currency speculator, George Soros, Bilderberg Group. The Chancellor at the time, who spent all that money and eventually pulled the pound out of the monetary system of Europe, was Norman Lamont, Bilderberg Group. Now, when I was talking in Sweden just a few weeks ago, I was talking about this, and some member of the audience in Sweden came up and said, I couldn't believe it when you mentioned that guy, George Soros. He said, what happened in Sweden, he said, was before we went into the European community, all the opinion polls were very strongly against going in. He said, then this guy, George Soros, Bilderberg Group, started attacking the Swedish currency. The Swedish government tried to defend the currency under the prime ministership of Carl Bildt, Bilderberg Group, and eventually chaos ensued. And a great fear started to go into the Swedish psyche of, oh my goodness, we need protection. What's going on here? We can't stand alone. Even speculators are taking our currency apart. After that, the opinion polls for going into the European community flipped